Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, the 26th of January, 2012. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. We call it The Voice, and our Voice Network simulcast partners, KJAA, AM 1240, our friends in Globe and Gila County, listen to the Buckmaster Show there. And then in Douglas and Cochise County, it's KAPR AM 930 for the Buckmaster Show. And of course, live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And we're excited that you can hear the program really anytime, anywhere. buckmastershow.com for one, tucsonsentinel.com for two, or tucsoncitizen.com is your third choice, or it could be your first choice, depending on how you want to do it. But anyway, there are plenty of opportunities to hear the show anywhere, anytime. We're live Monday through Friday, noon to one. We begin with a newsmaker interview with Tom Horn. Mr. Horn is the Attorney General for the state of Arizona. We have lots to cover with Mr. Horn over the next 25 minutes. 30 minutes past the hour, a preview of this Saturday's fifth annual Beat Back Bufflegrass. What is bufflegrass, and why is it such an upsetting thing to so many people here in Southern Arizona in the environmental community? We'll find out. And we'll close out the show with Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks appears on our program once a month. He is our contributor on education. Lots to talk about in that area, including a new study showing early education for poor children yields long-term benefits. We encourage you to be part of the conversation. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040 if you have a question or comment for the state's Attorney General, Tom Horn. He will be delighted to answer your questions. You can also email questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. Now let's welcome Tom Horn to the Buckmaster Show, the Attorney General for the state of Arizona. Tom, how are you today?
Oh, it's great to be with you, Bill.
It's good to hear from you. Do you want to make a quick comment on this judge upholding the Arizona school voucher plan?
Well, our office defended it, so I congratulate Kevin Ray, who is the lawyer who handled the case.
What's it mean for parents and children in this state?
It mean for handicapped children. It means that they have choice. They get 90% of what would be spent in the public schools to spend it elsewhere if the parents think the child can get better services elsewhere.
I want to begin now with our conversation with you about some of the issues concerning risky mortgages. The President of the United States, Mr. Obama, during his State of the Union address, said that he is asking his Attorney General to create a special unit of federal prosecutors and what he called leading state attorneys general to expand their investigation into abusive lending and packaging of risky mortgages that lead to the housing crisis. Is Arizona now involved in this?
We're very much involved in two ways. The first way is that there's a national effort by the attorneys general to reach an overall settlement with the banks, in which the banks would pay many billions of dollars into a fund that would be used to reduce principal, reduce interest rates, help people who are in danger of being foreclosed on, help people who were wrongly foreclosed on, fund outreach efforts, giving counseling, and the counseling sometimes can prevent the foreclosures and so on. We are on the executive committee of that national negotiation. Now, 48 states have withheld any legal action pending the development of this negotiation, but two states have actually filed lawsuits, and that's Nevada and ourselves. We filed a lawsuit against the Bank of America, which took over one of the big lending companies countrywide that went under, and that is one of the biggest mortgage servicing entities in the country, and it really has a substantial percentage of all of them. And our lawsuit, we've been prosecuting vigorously. We filed it in state court to try to get it to trial quickly. Bank of America moved it to federal court because federal court moves much more slowly, and you can move a case to federal court just by filing some papers And then if we want to get it back, we have to file a motion to remand, which we did. And that was hotly fought over, and we won it, which means that if necessary, we'd get to trial in a much more reasonable time than would be true in federal court. And that's an example of the fact that it's a very, very resource and labor-intensive fight going on between us and the Bank of America. We will not enter into the national settlement unless we can also settle the Bank of America case at the same time. So there are three states who said they won't enter into the national settlement under any circumstances. That's New York, Delaware, and California. I have, of course, they might change their minds. That's a position they've taken up till now. I might not enter into the settlement if we can't settle with Bank of America. But if we can settle with Bank of America, I think it's a favorable settlement. By litigating, you might be able to get more money, but it takes a long time, and meanwhile, people are suffering, and you might end up with less, in which case one would have regretted not accepting the settlement.
So at this point, Arizona probably will join in with the federal probe. Is that safe to say?
Arizona, yes, I would say Arizona will probably join in the settlement, unless we can't settle with Bank of America. As far as the probe goes, he just announced it, and we haven't been contacted about it. So as far as the probe that he's talking about goes, you know, I really don't know anything about that at this point. But we've been probing, and we've been litigating, and we've been seeking damages from Bank of America.
Would you expect that Arizona will be asked by the federal government to get involved with this special unit?
Well, was it Yogi Berra who said it's hard to make predictions, especially about the future?
This foreclosure issue, Tom Horn, is still a huge one. As many as 50,000 Arizonans struggling to stay in their homes. What is state government doing to help these people?
We're quite active in that area. We do a lot of outreach. I remember one time, Bill, I was in the parking lot and there was a woman there crying. So I went over and said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "Well, she had come to try to see somebody because she was about to lose her house." So I brought her to one of our people who work on those kind of cases, and they were able to save her house. And there have been about 60 like that, where by our talking to the banks, we're able to get their attention and avoid some wrongful foreclosures. And also, out of settlement money of past lawsuits that we've had, we fund some other agencies besides ourselves that are involved in counseling of people that are in danger of losing their house. So we're quite active in that area.
Tom Horn is with us on the Buckmaster Show. If you'd like to join in the conversation, 790-2040, 790-2040. It's 1212 on the Buckmaster Show. And Mr. Horn, along with the Secretary of State Ken Bennett and State Representative Eddie Farnsworth, have announced new legislation that will make some changes to existing law related to campaign finance regulation and so-called Citizens United organizations. Tom Horn, why is this important?
Well, it's important because under Citizens United, the United States Supreme Court held that corporations could give money for independent campaigns. These are often negative campaigns that attack people running for office. And part of that idea was that there would be disclosure of who's engaging in those campaigns, so the public can judge whether they want to believe the message or not. This legislation would tighten those regulations so that we could make sure that if somebody's engaged in an independent campaign, they disclose who gave money, so people know who's behind it and they can judge it. In the Citizens United case, the Supreme Court said the following. It's just two sentences, which I think would be very useful for your listeners. The Supreme Court said, "The First Amendment protects political speech, and disclosure permits citizens and shareholders to react to the speech of corporate entities in a proper way. This transparency enables the electorate to make informed decisions and give proper weight to different speakers and messages." And so this legislation is designed to achieve just what the United States Supreme Court said in this case. Incidentally, the part of the case that determined that corporations could make contribution was decided 5-4. But the part of the case that said that states have a right to require that you disclose who gave the money was adopted by the U.S. Supreme Court 8-1. So virtually the entire Supreme Court remains strongly behind this idea that if people can engage in whatever speech they want, but they have to disclose who's funding it.
In last year, 2011, Tom Horn, we did see a huge number of new corporations participating in local elections. Is that healthy?
Well, I'm the wrong one to ask because I was the object of some independent campaigns that said things about me that were extremely untrue, that were exactly the opposite of the truth. So I didn't find it healthy, but it's up to the United States Supreme Court to decide what's constitutional. And as the Attorney General and an officer of the court, I have to uphold that.
The Attorney General's office, of course, will be you're proposing here that the AG office will have the ability then to investigate groups that fail to register. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. And will this the whole point here is to bring more transparency, isn't that?
The whole point is to bring more transparency. That's a bullseye.
Before we take a break, I want to touch on an update with you, Mr. Attorney General, on the medical marijuana situation. We're hearing that the state's first medical marijuana dispensaries could be up and running and selling the drug by mid-July. Give us an update.
That sounds like an optimistic schedule to me, but certainly by the end of the year. The governor's proceeded with the process to give dispensary licenses. The judge... You know, we brought a court action. We didn't take a position as to whether the law should be preempted or not by federal law, but we brought a court action saying the judge should indicate that because we were fearful about state employees being accused of facilitating distribution of marijuana if federal law preempted. The court dismissed the case, saying there wasn't a real and it wasn't enough of a current threat to warrant court action. And there have been statements out of the U.S. Attorney's Office indicating that they have no intention to do so. So as long as they have no intention to do so, we can proceed with the dispensaries. And if we get any inkling that they're going to try to go after any state employees, we'll be right back in court.
How do you feel personally, not as the Attorney General, about the medical marijuana?
I'm opposed to it. I think that it brings about a drug culture. That's what I've seen in California. As somebody who's, as you know, involved in education for many years, I've seen the effect on kids when they start smoking marijuana. They lose their ambition. Their grades go down. It's like, oh, cool, man, who cares about grades? You know, life is beautiful kind of thing. And I think it basically can destroy the remainder of their lives because they lose their achievement motivation. I do have, obviously, sympathy for people who need marijuana for medical purposes, but I think that would best be achieved by at the federal level, possibly making it a level 2 drug, so doctors could prescribe it. It could be dispensed, let's say, in hospitals. But having dispensaries, you know, having kids walk by marijuana dispensaries on the street, I think creates completely the wrong atmosphere for our society.
And of course, when we return,
at the same time, the voters voted for it, and I respect the will of the voters, so I will implement it.
And when we return with Tom Horn, what about putting a casino by a high school? We'll hear from Mr. Horn on that subject, and we'll also touch on Mexican-American studies, the ethnic studies situation, all that to come with Tom Horn. And Tom will be delighted to take your questions or comments at 790-2040 when we return on The Buckmaster Show.
Cleaning out the garage.
Not exactly. I'm trying to find Grandma Lynn's clock for what it's worth.
For what?
What's it worth with a Z? It's an antiques appraisal fundraising event on February 12th at the Doubletree Hotel. You can bring in 2 items, have them appraised by those famous appraisers, you know, you see on TV.
Famous appraisers?
Yeah, you know, Colleen Fesco, Michael Flanagan.
How much does it cost and what can I have appraised?
A $60 ticket, woman, admits 2 people and you can bring up to 2 items. You can bring furniture, jewelry, china, rugs, paintings, whatever. The proceeds go to help children in need in Tucson.
Where can I buy tickets?
You can buy your tickets online at whatsitworth.org. That's what's it with a Z. Wait, where are you going?
I'm going to find my 2 items for What's It Worth. I love Michael Flanagan, and it's for a good cause. See you there.
Proceeds benefit Assistance League of Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded in 1930 by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn still sets the standard for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. The Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. The Arizona Inn has again been named one of the best 500 hotels on earth by Travel and Leisure magazine, the only hotel in Tucson to receive this top honor. And the Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson at 2200 East Elm and on the web at arizonainn.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than two dozen on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
I think we have the best bumper music of any talk show, certainly in Arizona, and I think our wonderful producer, Rosemary Brandt, has chosen wonderful music as our bumper music here on the Buckmaster Show. Would you agree with that from what you've heard, Mr. Tom Horn?
Could you repeat the question,
please? Do you like our bumper music?
I'm a classical music guy.
Tom Horn is with us, Arizona's Attorney General. We're going to go now to Robert on the Buckmaster Show. Robert has a question about medical marijuana. Go ahead, Robert. You're with Tom Horn.
Tom, I was ambivalent about that medical marijuana, and I voted for it. But if I had known that ridiculous leaf was going to show up in newspaper ads, sandwich boards, and on business marquees, I would have done things differently. Now, is there any way we can put that portion of it back in the box to where this stuff is dispensed by pharmacies?
Yes. The thing to do would be to contact your legislator, ask them to sponsor a referendum that the voters could consider on the next. It can't be changed except by the voters because it was passed by the voters. But rather than have to get a lot of signatures, you can get the legislature to put a referendum on the ballot. And if the voters passed it, they could repeal or modify what was passed last time.
790-2040, 790-2040 for Tom Horn. Let's talk a little bit about Congressman Grijalva's letter to Department of Education officials calling for the Mexican-Americans, calling for Mexican-American studies support, and he wants a civil rights investigation. He says that the Arizona statute forbidding schools to encourage, quote, overthrow of the U.S. government or prioritize ethnic identity over teaching students as individuals is wrong and is a violation of their civil rights. What do you have to say about that, Tom?
Well, if there needs to be a civil rights investigation, there needs to be a civil rights investigation of the people who've promulgated a course that openly promotes racism. My view is that we're all individuals, that what matters about us is our knowledge, what we can do, what is our character, and not what race we were born into. And I believe the public schools historically have formed the function of taking students from different backgrounds and teaching them to treat each other as individuals. What the proponents of this program at TUSD has done is it's the opposite. They divide kids up by race. You belong to this race, you go to this class. You belong to that race, you go to that class, which reminds me of the Old South. They promote ethnic chauvinism rather than teaching kids to treat each other as individuals, which I think is contrary to the most fundamental American values. And they, particularly in the Raza Studies class, which is the class for Mexican-Americans, Raza means the race in Spanish, they have very radical teachers. They use a textbook called The Pedagogy of the Oppressed by Paulo Freire, who's a self-described Brazilian Marxist, which teaches kids that the United States is dominated by a white, male, racist, imperialist class of people who want to oppress Latinos. And I believe these kids' parents and grandparents came to this country, most of them legally, because this is the land of opportunity. And they trust their kids to our schools. And we owe it to them to teach these kids that this is the land of opportunity. And if they work hard, they can achieve what they want to, and not teach them that they're oppressed. And what's particularly shocking is if you actually look at the curricular materials, most people have commented on this, haven't really looked at the curriculum materials. They are openly racist. They have columns that this is the quality of the white race, this is the quality of the colored races. Whites are individualistic, which they think is bad. Colored people are group oriented, which they claim is good. Collectivist, which they claim is good. They say white people interrupt a lot, that they don't travel much, so they don't know much. It's just pure, vulgar, racial stereotypes that they promulgate, and it has no place in American public schools.
What did you think of the New York Times editorial titled Rejected in Tucson, in effect saying the Tucson Unified School District was blackmailed into doing away with Mexican-American studies? Keeping the program would have meant losing more than $14 million in state funding.
Well, you know, my wife got so mad at the New York Times one time that she canceled our subscription, which I regretted because I grew up in New York and I've been reading the New York Times since I was a little kid. But this editorial is an example of why she did that. It's a harebrained, ignorant editorial written by people who have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. They haven't looked at the curriculum. They don't know the vile racism that's being taught in this course. They're just popping off out of ignorance.
Quickly here, we've got about 3 minutes to go, and I want to bring up your op-ed piece, I think it was last week in the Arizona Republic, about the government in effect breaking its vow to voters and the Indian Nation tribes. And this has to do with perhaps placing a huge casino in Glendale in suburban Phoenix within shouting distance of a high school campus. Is there anything that can be done to stop that?
Well, we are litigating to stop it. Our litigation claims that there was an agreement that all the tribes made that casinos would not be put in cities, that they would be on reservations away from cities. And what happened was that the federal government allowed the Tohono O'odham Nation to acquire land, which they were entitled to acquire land to make up for part of the reservation that was flooded by a dam. But they acquired land secretly in the name of the Rainier Corporation, which nobody knew what that was, out of the state of Washington, in Glendale, with the idea once the federal government agreed that that became part of the reservation, then they could put a casino there. And the federal government did that without having any hearings, allowing any input for the people in Glendale. You know, we've talked a lot about federal government intrusion in state affairs. This is the worst example I've ever seen. The federal government is saying to the people of Glendale, we're going to force you to become another Las Vegas, even though you may want to have a family-oriented city. It's outrageous, and we're doing everything we can to litigate against the federal government on this.
And this is very close, this mega casino, is it not to, I believe it's Kellis High School in Glendale.
I think that's correct, Bill.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's within the high schoolers would be, they certainly would be very close to that casino.
Right.
Tom Horn, thank you very much for spending a half an hour with us here on the Buckmaster Show. We appreciate your comments and your input and giving our listeners a chance to hear what's on your mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to talk to you always, and I'm delighted to come back anytime you want me.
Okay, Tom Horn with us on the Buckmaster Show as we come up now towards 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show. And what's going on with Buffelgrass? We keep hearing about Beat Back Buffelgrass Day. We'll find out, well, why is Buffelgrass such a danger? That's coming up next as we continue with the Thursday edition of Buckmaster on The Voice, KVOI.
I'm Rich Thomason in Washington.
Defense Secretary Panetta says the Obama administration will propose to Congress that U.S. ground forces be cut by 100,000 as part of budget reductions. It would also eliminate older aircraft, limit military pay raises, and slow the buying of a next-generation fighter plane. President Obama says the administration will open a large stretch of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas exploration. Evidence that the economy is picking up steam had been keeping the major stock indexes positive this morning. They've now turned mixed in afternoon trading. The government reports that factory orders for durable goods were up again in December, while the Conference Board's Index of Leading Indicators posted a 0.4% gain. On Wall Street, the Dow is now down about 18 points. More details at srnnews.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit PyramidFCU.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Well, 1234, this is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition, and I am Bill Buckmaster. This Saturday is the 5th annual Beat Back Bufflegrass Day. There are events planned, well, at about 17 venues. That's how many I counted up. Maybe there are more, including Saguaro National Park. Ecologist Dana Backer joins us right now. She is a ranger at Saguaro National Park. Dana, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me here, Bill. I hope to share what I know with you and your listeners about bufflegrass.
Well, you know what that first question is going to be. What in the heck is bufflegrass?
Bufflegrass is a perennial bunch grass that is native to Africa and the Mediterranean states. And it was brought here to the U.S. in the early 1930s for cattle forage and erosion control, kind of around the Dust Bowl era, trying to replace the native grasses that had been either removed for whatever reason.
Is it fast growing?
Yes, very fast growing. It's kind of a exponential growth curve it has, which is typical of an invasive plant. Some recent research done in the Catalina foothills showed that bufflegrass is doubling every 2 to 3 years since 1988 in selected spots.
So how did it get here? I mean, is it just a natural process that once it was introduced to, I think you said, during the 30s, I mean, it just sort of spreads?
It was intentionally planted as a test plants, and then it was released to cattle ranchers to plant it for forage. There were test plots here at the Plant Materials Center in Tucson, Santa Rita Experimental Range, other areas throughout southern Arizona, and it just continue to spread into urban areas and natural undisturbed areas over time.
Is it difficult to get rid of it? I mean, how do you attack it? And we're going to have this Beat Back Bufflegrass Day. What's the best way to get rid of it? Just pull the roots up, or
there's a couple ways to remove it. You can remove it, as you suggested, by pulling it up by the roots, but a lot of times it requires some sort of a tool like a shovel or a digging bar so that you do get the base of the roots out. That's really important. Herbicide is also effective on treating bufflegrass, but only when the plant is green is the herbicides effective. Mowing and fire only stimulate the growth of bufflegrass, so it's really you got to remove it entirely by hand.
So burning it off isn't really going to be a good solution.
Exactly. That's actually part
problem. Well, why not burn it up? But why does that just facilitates more growth, I guess, huh?
It does. And that's one of the issues why it's such a concern here in the Tucson area in southern Arizona is that it introduces a fuel source that was not naturally here. And so the amount of biomass that it puts on the plant would cause fires to be very intense, very hot, fast moving, high flame lengths. And so, and our native vegetation is not adapted to fire. So saguaros and Palo Verdes and other types of cacti would not tolerate fire. So they would be eliminated or reduced or severely damaged if a fire were to happen, and then bufflegrass would just be very happy.
790-2040, 790-2040. If you have any questions about buffel grass, we have ecologist Dana Backer with us in studio. She is an ecologist and ranger in the Saguaro National Park here in Tucson. So the Beatback Buffel Grass Day, this is the fifth annual year. Have you been making some progress with these buffel grass days?
Absolutely.
Beating this, back buffel grass days.
Exactly. It is kind of a tongue twister.
Yes.
So as you mentioned, this is the fifth one, and it's been supported by Pima Association of Governments, Southern Arizona Buffel Grass Coordination Center, and lots of organizations, individual groups, and neighborhoods have been participating in this event. It's the one time that we all come together and make a concerted effort to remove buffel grass from natural areas, roadsides, neighborhoods, et cetera. But there are many monthly and weekly buffel grass removal projects going on throughout the county on a regular basis. And we need everybody's help. We need volunteers to help remove it from your alleyways and your neighborhoods and your parks you visit. And so having volunteers to come out on one day to recognize it is really great.
And there is a coordinating website, because there are, I said, 17 venues. I think there's actually more than that this weekend. It's buffelgrass, buffelgrass.org. And what should people, if they go to one of these 18 to 20 sites, what should they be prepared to do? I mean, other than ripping up the buffel grass, they need to probably wear some certain type of clothing.
Right. And all that is on the website. You first need to register for one of the sites, and that will automatically generate information to you on what time to show up, how to get there, what to be prepared to do, some guidance on safety, what to wear, like you mentioned, what to bring, like a hat and sunscreen and water.
Long pants would probably be a good idea, too.
Yeah, long pants. I like to wear long sleeves because the grass is, you know, it's dry right now, and so it can be kind of itchy. And the sturdier the shoes, the better, because you will be using digging tools right near your feet.
And I was going to go over some of these venues real quickly. A Mountain is one, the Airport Corridor, Irvington Road and Benson Highway, Skyline Drive area, Colossal Cave, of course, Saguaro National Park. Both units, the east and west, are going to be involved, or just the Rincon unit?
Actually, this year's National Park event is going to be held in Kings Canyon. The Saguaro National Park has a monthly buffel grass pull that we do in the Rincon Mountain District every month. So we're switching it over for this one day to be over at Kings Canyon, because it's a favorite spot for a lot of folks, and it gets you out into a really beautiful area.
And also our friends in Green Valley listening to the Buckmaster Show, there's going to be activities down there. Kennedy Park, Rio Vista Park, a wide area, Sycamore Canyon, Town of Marana is involved, Town of Oro Valley, Saharita is also on board. You really have gotten a wide range of governmental entities to join you, haven't you?
Yeah, I can't take credit for that. Lindy Bingham with the SABCE, Southern Arizona Buffel Grass Coordination Center, has been really pounding the pavement and getting lots of involvement. For the past 2 years, Coach Kondrea and the U of A women's softball team has been helping out, and that's really been a great publicity and opportunity to educate a lot of the young folks in the Tucson area.
Does buffel grass grow in an area? Is there a particular area that it really likes? I mean, like by a wash or certain vegetation?
As with most invasive species, they're very opportunistic, and so they can adapt to lots of spaces. Here in the Tucson, in the urban area, it particularly likes roadsides because of the extra little bit of runoff it gets. So it does like water. It likes sun. It likes open spaces. So you won't necessarily find a patch starting under, say, a mesquite tree. It would start out in the open. In the natural areas, it tends to like the steep, rocky, south-facing slopes, and that's, you know, part of that we think is because it's hotter there, and this grass is very tolerant of hot conditions. So it's really very opportunistic. And in Mexico, they are still planting it in pastures. So, you know, a wide range of areas that it's adapted to.
A quick update on the saguaros. It's been a year now since the very killing frost, killing freeze that we had here in southern Arizona. And saguaros really have taken their share of well, they really were hurt by that frost and freeze. How bad is it?
We're currently in the process of recounting some plots, and we're seeing that there is a lot of damage to particularly the young ones, and then the old ones or ones that were already injured or sick. But yeah, it is pretty devastating. It's dramatic. You can see it out there on the landscape. It's, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get back to you on some of the quantification of that.
And hopefully it's only a 100-year event, so we don't have to worry about all those frozen pipes that we had here in southern Arizona. Dana, thank you very much. And for people who want more information about the beatback bufflegrass, again, that site, the website, bufflegrass.org, and sign up and bring some sturdy shoes, long pants, long sleeves, and, of course, sun protection. Dana Backer, thank you.
Thank you very much. Hope to see you all out on Beat That Bufflegrass Day.
All right. Coming up 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show, Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education. A lot of new information, interesting studies to talk with Bob Hendricks about when we continue.
RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Coming up on 12:48, this is the Buckmaster Show on the Thursday edition. We're live here on KVOI, noon to 1, Monday through Friday. Well, poor children who get high-quality daycare as early as infancy reap long-lasting benefits, including a better chance at a college degree and steady employment. That according to a new study that followed participants from birth to age 30. The latest findings are from the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill study, and they were published last week in the online journal Developmental Psychology. The findings are one of the longest-running child care studies in the United States. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show, our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He is former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. He has taught organizational theory, human resource management, and policy analysts at the master's and doctoral level. He is former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. He is the one-time school superintendent of the year here in Arizona. Bob, good to see you.
Nice to be back, Bill.
You've got to be very interested. I think this is amazing, this study, because, first of all, it's not just a one-year deal. They really followed these kids and into young adults to age 30.
Yeah, it's very rare that you have a longitudinal study that spans the amount of time that this study does. I mean, the study began in 1972 and has followed these students as children, you know, through young adulthood, through, you know, almost middle age. And it's an interesting result because I think we have a lot of push and pull political debates about preschool education because obviously it's a costly enterprise. And so there's always this question, does preschool education make a difference? And one of the things I think is really important when we examine that question is, we're really talking about daycare. We're talking about a structured educational curriculum. And what we're really discussing here is a qualified program that really takes into account an understanding of the development of a child. Because we know that children in poverty do fall behind. They fall behind very, very quickly. In fact, if they haven't developed good language skills by the age of three, we have a number of studies to say that they're going to fall continually behind. And so to have a developmental program that helps students with their language skills, with their mathematical skills early on, coincides and is verified by this longitudinal study.
I think this is going to be really – this will be fuel for those that do believe in the benefits for early education. At all levels, not just for poor children. I would think that early education does pay dividends.
It does, because we know that without a curriculum, without a developmental program for children early on, that it's going to adversely affect them cognitively. Certainly, parents of means many times offer lots of enrichment activities for students, but I think we don't have to necessarily assume that that's happening either. As you suggest, you know, all children could benefit by this kind of a program.
This was a structured program, and you mentioned there's a difference between just putting a child in a supervised environment in a daycare setting and one that actually has some goals set out for the very young kids in a learning environment,
yes,
right?
So yes.
This is like, well, I guess, a very early kindergarten.
It yeah. would be. I'm always very careful to footnote that by saying that it really isn't an extension of kindergarten, but there are certainly skill development activities that are very, very early on before what we know is the kindergarten experience. And these kinds of nurturing experiences really help scientists say, really help wire the brains of children and help them in their intelligence and their behavior. And really what it gets down to me is, do you want to pay now or do you want to pay later? And back to the issue that preschool is very expensive. I mean, we've seen very very different renditions of that. We've seen Head Start. We've seen structured preschool programs that I think much more sophisticated than that. But do we want to pay for that now, or do we want to pay for it later? Because there's also some evidence that if you pay for it now, that ultimately these children who have these well-developed formative nurturing experiences are going to reduce the welfare rolls, they're going to reduce our prison costs, and they're also going to cut, and I think this is pretty significant, cut our services needed in special education.
The context is interesting, too, for these findings. Coming up in a court battle, actually, that's been looming in North Carolina.
Yes.
Over state-funded pre-kindergarten for low-income children in North Carolina. For months, the Democratic governor and the Republican leaders in the legislature in North Carolina have been at odds over funding for preschool for four-year-olds. And it doesn't just have to be North Carolina. We've had similar arguments right here in Arizona.
We have. We have. And again, there's this it's a natural tension because there are significant dollars involved. A state has to make a major commitment to subsidizing and funding this kind of a program. And I think we now have some longitudinal evidence of a long-term nature, which is added to some of the other studies that have been of a shorter duration that suggests that it's money very well spent.
A couple of months ago, our session with you, Dr. Hendricks, we were talking about virtual schools, and there is now some information that has come out in the last 30 days, according to a study. Online public schools where students as young as kindergartners log on from home to take classes don't make the grade, according to this study, this report from the National Education Policy Center at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Big questions about virtual schools.
There are big questions, and I think some of those questions, at least with the structure and the system we have set up in our state, are going to remain unanswered until we actually require students participating in alternative school programs to go through the same testing and measurement and assessment that we hold other schools, our public schools, accountable for.
The interaction that you get in that virtual setting, I just wonder, I don't know if it's good for the kids not to be interacting with other kids in school. That's just kind of my gut feeling about it.
Well, that's my opinion as well. I mean, I know that clearly at the in the developmental level of children that social interaction is very, very important, and it should be in the context of not only the friendliness of getting to know other people, but also in the context of learning and sharing and cooperating with other people. And it seems to me that that's a very big piece of the experience that would be missing for someone who is home all day in front of a computer.
And the study looked at both for-profit and non-profit companies that specializing in running charter schools. And, you know, this is a huge area. These companies that are – I mean, virtual education is one of the big growing economic components of the education industry, isn't it?
Well, it's highly profitable. I mean, once you have developed your system and set up a delivery system that's technologically appropriate, you can reap a lot of financial rewards.
School vouchers. There was a decision today. We talked a little bit about this with Tom Horn at the top of the program today. What are your general feelings about the voucher system? Hate to put you on the spot there.
Well, no, I'm really conflicted about vouchers. I think that there obviously are the standard arguments about the separation of church and state. And so if you have vouchers that you're given to private schools that have sectarian affiliation, that's one question. If you're giving it to private schools that don't have those affiliations, maybe there's some options there, some possibilities. I think it certainly remains to be a discussion that needs to be further developed.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a discussion that's going to be it's very controversial, and it certainly is not going to be going away anytime soon. We will save this topic for another day. The Goldwater Institute out with a report on homeschooling, and they're very much they're celebrating actually National School Choice Week, and they're saying homeschooling, its day has come, but we can probably devote that for another whole segment.
Yeah, I'd like to follow some of the measurements of that. So we'll have that discussion, Bill.
Okay. Dr. Robert Hendricks, thank you very much for being with us on the Buckmaster Show. We've been talking about virtual schools, one study showing that the virtual schools are just not making that much progress. And then we were also talking about early education for poor children, yielding some very long-term benefits in a study out of North Carolina. Very interesting stuff. Robert Hendricks, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much. I want to remind you the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants. If you are looking for a CPA, and who isn't this time of year, right, with taxes coming up, we strongly recommend you check out and give a call to Michael C. Flowers or drop by their offices at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Coming up tomorrow on the Friday Focus, we always have a newsmaker interview here on Friday. Senator Al Melvin will be in studio with us, and of course we'll have our reporters roundtable, and that will feature Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, and Dylan Smith will be with us from the TucsonSentinel.com. So if you have any questions for Senator Melvin, you can get your calls ready now, 790-2040. Give us a call tomorrow with Senator Melvin. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Thanks for being with us. We will be back with you noon tomorrow on KVOI, The Voice. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cordero, Tucson. 930, KAPR, Douglas. And 1240, KJAA Globe, The Voice.